Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Forgotten Ward, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1: Whispers in the Halls. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead, casting a sickly green hue over the long, sterile corridor. St. Dempsey's Hospital wasn't the gleaming beacon of hope it claimed to be. The paint on the walls peeled in jagged strips, and the faint smell of antiseptic never quite masked the underlying stench of mildew. It was the kind of place that whispered to you when no one was around, a place that thrived on secrets. I tightened my grip on my clipboard, the laminated surface slick with sweat. It was my third double shift in a row, and exhaustion had begun to gnaw at the edges of my focus. But tonight wasn't like the others. Something felt off. The abandoned psychiatric ward loomed in the hospital's east wing, sealed off for as long as I'd worked here. Most of us pretended it didn't exist. The heavy double doors, rusted shut and locked with thick chains, were a ghostly reminder of its presence. I'd heard the stories, of course. We all had. Tales of patients screaming through the night, of doctors who disappeared without explanation. But stories were just stories, until they weren't. A low, shuffling sound broke my thoughts. I froze mid-step, my heart lurching into my throat. The corridor ahead was empty, save for the gurney parked crookedly against the wall. But the sound had been real, hadn't it? A faint scrape, like nails on concrete. "Get a grip, Sam," I whispered to myself, forcing a shaky exhale. "You're just tired." I resumed walking, my sneakers squeaking against the linoleum. The nurse's station came into view, its dim light a small island of normalcy in the oppressive darkness. Maggie, the night shift nurse, barely looked up from her crossword puzzle as I approached. "Quiet night," she mumbled, twirling her pen between her fingers. I dropped my clipboard onto the desk with a soft thud. "Too quiet," Maggie snorted. "Don't jinx it. The last thing I need is another psych patient flipping out." The psych ward was always a hotbed of chaos, but tonight, even that wing seemed unnaturally subdued. I couldn't shake the feeling that the hospital itself was holding its breath. The unease followed me through my rounds. Room after room, I checked vitals and administered meds, my movements mechanical. Yet every so often, I caught the faintest sound, a hushed murmur, a distant creak. By the time I reached the end of my list, my nerves were frayed. My last stop was room 312, an observation room at the far end of the psychiatric wing. The patient, Oliver Stone, had been admitted 2 days ago. Schizophrenia, the chart said, though his symptoms didn't quite fit the diagnosis. He claimed to hear voices, not uncommon, but his descriptions were unnerving. "They're trapped," he'd told me during my last visit, his eyes wide and unblinking. "Down there, screaming for help." I didn't ask him what he meant by "down there." Patients like Oliver often created elaborate delusions, and indulging them rarely helped. But tonight, his words felt heavier, their weight pressing against my chest. The door to room 312 was ajar, the faint glow of the bedside lamp spilling into the hallway. I pushed it open slowly. "Oliver," I called softly. He was sitting in the corner, his knees drawn to his chest. The shadows made his thin frame look skeletal, his hospital gown hanging off him like a shroud. His gaze snapped to mine, and I stopped in my tracks. "They don't want you to know," he whispered. "But you'll hear them. Soon." Later that night, I found myself outside the doors to the abandoned ward. It wasn't intentional. At least, that's what I told myself. My rounds had ended, and I should have been back at the nurse's station, sipping lukewarm coffee and counting the hours until my shift ended. But something had pulled me here, my feet carrying me almost against my will. The chains hung loosely, the padlock coated in rust. I stared at it for a long moment, my breath clouding in the chilly air. A low hum seemed to emanate from beyond the doors, so faint I wasn't sure if I was imagining it. My hand trembled as I reached out, my fingers brushing the cold metal. A sudden burst of static crackled through the overhead speakers, and I jumped back, my heart hammering in my chest. The speakers went silent again, the hospital falling into an oppressive stillness. I should have walked away. Every instinct screamed at me to turn around, to leave the secrets of this place buried. But curiosity is a powerful thing, and fear only makes it stronger. I leaned closer, peering through the narrow gap between the doors. That's when I saw it, a face. Pale, gaunt, and staring straight at me. The face was there for only a second, maybe less. But in that fleeting moment, its features burned into my mind. Hollow eyes, the dark pits of which seemed to go on forever. A mouth that didn't move, yet somehow screamed. I stumbled back, clutching the wall for support, my breath coming in shallow gasps. When I dared to look again, the face was gone. The doors stood as they always had, chained, rusted, silent. My rational mind scrambled for an explanation. A reflection? A trick of the light? But deep down I knew better. Sam! Maggie's voice echoed down the corridor, sharp and cutting through the silence. I spun around to see her jogging toward me, her brow furrowed. What the hell are you doing down here? She demanded, glancing nervously at the chained doors. You know we're not supposed to be near the east wing. I heard something, I stammered, my voice barely above a whisper. Her expression softened, but only slightly. You've been working too many shifts. Come on, let's get back to the station. I hesitated, glancing back at the doors one last time. That same faint hum seemed to vibrate in the air, but Maggie didn't appear to notice. With a reluctant nod, I followed her down the hallway, though every instinct screamed for me to turn back. Back at the nurse's station, I couldn't focus. My hands shook as I sipped my coffee, the bitter liquid doing little to calm my nerves. Maggie kept throwing me concerned glances, but she didn't press the issue. Maybe she thought I'd finally cracked under the pressure, like so many others who'd worked here. The rest of the night passed in a haze. The usual monotony of charting and vitals felt surreal, as though I were moving through a dream. But the weight of what I'd seen, or thought I'd seen, hung heavy in my chest. When my shift finally ended, I lingered in the parking lot. The sun was just beginning to rise, casting long shadows across the cracked asphalt. I should have gone straight home, collapsed into bed, and let exhaustion pull me into a dreamless sleep. Instead, I found myself sitting in my car, staring at the hospital's looming silhouette. Something wasn't right. I'd known it for a while, but tonight had confirmed it. The missing files, the strange noises, Oliver's cryptic warnings, all of it pointed to something dark and twisted lurking within these walls. And if I didn't figure out what it was, I knew I wouldn't be able to live with myself. The next night, I came prepared. I told myself it was just curiosity, but the truth was more complicated. A part of me needed to know what lay behind those doors. I couldn't shake the image of that face, its hollow eyes boring into me. And Oliver's words echoed in my mind like a mantra. They don't want you to know. I waited until the hospital had settled into its usual nighttime rhythm. The halls were quiet, the staff scarce. I slipped a flashlight into my bag, along with a pair of bolt cutters I'd borrowed from the maintenance closet. My heart raced as I made my way toward the east wing, every creak of the floor making me jump. The abandoned ward was even more foreboding at night. The chains glinted in the dim light, the padlock seeming larger and more menacing than I remembered. My hands trembled as I pulled out the bolt cutters, their weight unfamiliar and awkward. It took 3 tries to position them correctly, and each crunch of metal sent a jolt of panic through me. When the padlock finally fell to the ground, the sound echoed like a gunshot. I froze, listening for any sign that I'd been discovered. But the hospital remained eerily silent, as though it were holding its breath. I pushed the doors open. The air inside was thick and stagnant, carrying the faint metallic tang of blood and decay. My flashlight cut through the darkness, revealing peeling wallpaper and broken tiles. The ward was a graveyard, frozen in time. Rusted gurneys and overturned chairs littered the hallway, and the walls were covered in crude graffiti, symbols and phrases that made my skin crawl. Help US. They watch. Don't trust the doctors. The further I ventured, the more suffocating the atmosphere became. My footsteps echoed, each one sounding like a scream in the oppressive silence. The hum I'd heard before was louder now, a low, pulsating vibration that seemed to emanate from the very walls. At the end of the corridor, I found a room with the door ajar. My flashlight trembled in my grip as I stepped inside. The room was small and bare, save for a single metal table bolted to the floor. Dark stains marred its surface, and I didn't need to be a forensic expert to know they were blood. A cabinet stood in the corner, its glass doors shattered. Inside, I saw vials and syringes, their labels faded and unreadable. I approached the table, my breath hitching as I noticed something carved into the metal. SB. My initials. A chill ran down my spine. I reached out to touch the carving, but a sudden noise stopped me cold. A soft, wet sound, like something dragging across the floor. I spun around, my flashlight beam darting wildly across the room. "Who's there?" I whispered, my voice cracking. No answer. But the sound continued, growing louder. It was coming from the hallway. I backed toward the door, my heart pounding so loudly I could barely think. The dragging noise stopped. And then a voice, low and guttural, yet somehow familiar. "You shouldn't be here." Chapter 2. The Patient Who Knew Too Much. The voice sent a jolt through my body like an electric shock. My flashlight slipped from my trembling fingers, clattering to the floor. Darkness swallowed the room, leaving me blind and defenseless. My breath came in short, ragged bursts as I scrambled to retrieve the flashlight. The sound of my hands brushing against the floor amplified in the silence. The dragging noise resumed, closer now. My heart thudded painfully in my chest, a frantic drumbeat of terror. I forced myself to grip the flashlight, its beam shaking wildly as I pointed it toward the hallway. The corridor was empty, its shadows still and heavy, but the noise had been real, I was sure of it. "You shouldn't be here," the voice repeated, softer this time, like a whisper carried on the wind. "Who's there?" I managed to croak, my throat dry and tight. The silence that followed was deafening, stretching on until I could feel it pressing against my ears. A faint shuffling sound made me spin around, but the room was as empty as before. I needed to get out, now. Whatever curiosity had brought me here evaporated in the face of overwhelming fear. My instincts screamed at me to flee, but my legs felt rooted to the spot. I stumbled back down the hallway, my flashlight barely illuminating the decaying walls. The air grew heavier with every step, and the faint hum that had once been a whisper was now a steady, throbbing vibration. It felt like the building itself was alive, its pulse sinking with my own. When I reached the doors, I nearly sobbed with relief. They were still ajar, the broken chains dangling like dead vines. I pushed through them and ran, not stopping until I was back in the safety of the main hospital. The familiar sights and sounds of the night shift, muted conversations, the beep of monitors, felt surreal, like I'd stepped into a different world. I collapsed into the chair at the nurse's station, my hands shaking uncontrollably. Maggie looked up from her crossword, her brow furrowing. "You look like you've seen a ghost," she said, her tone light, but tinged with concern. I think I did," I muttered, barely able to form the words. She set her pen down and leaned forward. "Sam, what's going on? You've been acting weird all night." I opened my mouth to explain but hesitated. How could I tell her what I'd seen? She'd think I was losing it, or worse, she'd tell Dr. Cole. The last thing I needed was to end up on his radar. "Just tired," I lied, forcing a weak smile. "I'll be fine." Maggie didn't look convinced, but she didn't press the issue. I was grateful for that. The next day, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. Everywhere I went, I felt eyes on me, heavy, unblinking. Even the other staff seemed different. They avoided eye contact, their conversations stilted and guarded. It was as if the hospital itself had become a predator, and I was its prey. My unease grew when I checked Oliver's file. His name was still there, but the details were wrong. His diagnosis had been changed to delusional psychosis, and the notes from his previous doctors were missing. It was as if someone had rewritten his entire medical history overnight. When I went to check on him, I found his room empty. The bed was neatly made, the sheets tucked in with military precision. No sign of his belongings, no discharge papers, nothing. It was as if he'd never been there. I cornered Maggie in the break room, my voice shaking with urgency. "What happened to Oliver Stone? Did he get transferred?" She blinked at me, her expression blank. "Who?" "Oliver Stone," I repeated, frustration bubbling in my chest. "The patient in 312. "There's no patient in 312, she said slowly, as if speaking to a child. "That room's been empty for weeks." Her words hit me like a punch to the gut. I knew what I'd seen. I'd spoken to him, listened to his warnings. But now, it was as if he'd been erased. That night, I decided to search for answers. If Oliver's file had been altered, there had to be a record of the changes. The hospital's archive room was my best bet, though accessing it wouldn't be easy. The archives were kept in the basement, locked behind a heavy steel door. Only senior staff had the keycard to get in, and I wasn't senior staff. but I wasn't going to let that stop me. The opportunity came during a rare lull in the chaos of the psych ward. Dr. Harris Cole strolled past the nurse's station, his white coat pristine and his expression unreadable. I noticed the key card clipped to his belt, swinging slightly with every step. My pulse quickened. This was my chance. I followed him down the corridor, keeping my distance. When he turned into his office, I waited a beat before approaching. The door was ajar, and I could hear the sound of papers rustling. I took a deep breath and knocked lightly. "Come in," he said without looking up. I stepped inside, forcing a polite smile. "Dr. Cole, do you have a moment? I have a question about a patient." He raised an eyebrow, his sharp blue eyes studying me. "Which patient?" I hesitated, scrambling for a name. Mrs. Peterson in 214. She mentioned some side effects from her new medication, and I wanted to double-check the dosage. His expression softened, and he nodded. "Good catch. Let me grab her chart." The moment he turned his back, I acted. My hands moved quickly, unclipping the key card from his belt with a precision that surprised even me. My heart raced as I slipped it into my pocket, praying he wouldn't notice. He handed me the chart, and I pretended to skim it. "Thanks, Dr. Cole. I'll follow up with her right away." He nodded absently, already turning back to his desk. I left the office, my hands shaking as I clutched the stolen keycard. The archive room was as cold and foreboding as I'd imagined. The air smelled of dust and mildew, and the fluorescent lights flickered ominously. Rows upon rows of shelves stretched into the distance, each one crammed with files and boxes. I found the section labeled Psychiatric Ward and began my search. The records were disorganized, and I cursed under my breath as I rifled through them. Finally, I came across a folder with Oliver's name on it. My stomach dropped when I opened it. The file was empty. The only thing inside was a single sheet of paper, its edges charred as if it had been burned. Scrawled across it in shaky handwriting were three words. "They are watching." A noise behind me made me freeze. I turned slowly, my flashlight casting long shadows across the room. And then I saw him. Oliver Stone stood at the far end of the aisle, his hospital gown stained with something dark and wet. His eyes met mine, and a slow, eerie smile spread across his face. "They're coming," he said. Chapter 3, The Doctor's Secrets. For a moment, I couldn't breathe. My mind screamed that it was impossible, that Oliver couldn't be here. He had vanished, erased from the system like he'd never existed. Yet there he stood, his gaunt figure bathed in the dim glow of my flashlight. "They're coming," he repeated, his voice low and gravelly, like the words had been dragged from some dark pit. His eyes glinted with something I couldn't quite place. Was it fear? Or something more sinister? I opened my mouth to speak, but the words wouldn't come. My throat felt like it was closing, every nerve in my body screaming at me to run. Before I could move, Oliver took a step forward, his bare feet making no sound against the cold floor. "They know you've seen too much," he said, his gaze fixed on mine. "You need to leave. Now, what are you talking about?" I finally managed to whisper, my voice trembling. "Who's coming? What's going on?" He didn't answer. Instead, he reached into the pocket of his hospital gown and pulled out a folded piece of paper. He held it out to me, his hand steady despite the tremor that seemed to ripple through his body. "Take it," he said. "It's the only proof left." I hesitated, every instinct warning me not to get any closer. But curiosity won out, and I stepped forward, my hand shaking as I took the paper from his grasp. The moment it touched my fingers, he turned and walked away, disappearing into the shadows before I could call him back. I unfolded the paper, my heart hammering against my ribs. Scrawled across the page in messy handwriting was a list of names, each one followed by a series of dates. Some of the names I recognized, patients I'd cared for, all of whom had died under mysterious circumstances. At the bottom of the page, in bold, underlined letters, were the words, "Experimental Trial 43B, Property of Syn Pharmaceuticals." I barely made it back to the nurse's station before my legs gave out. I collapsed into the chair, the paper clutched tightly in my hand. My mind raced as I tried to make sense of what I'd just seen. Syn Pharmaceuticals was a name I recognized, a major pharmaceutical company with ties to several hospitals, including St. Dempsey's. But what was their connection to the psychiatric ward? And what the hell was Trial 43B? I didn't have time to dwell on it. Maggie walked into the station, her eyes narrowing when she saw me. "Sam, are you okay? You look like you've seen a ghost." "I'm fine," I lied, slipping the paper into my pocket. Just a long night. Her gaze lingered on me for a moment before she nodded. Well, Dr. Cole's looking for you. Something about a missing keycard. My stomach dropped. I forced a smile, my face aching from the effort. I'll find him, I said, standing on legs that felt like jelly. Thanks. Dr. Cole was in his office, his expression unreadable as I knocked on the door. He waved me inside, his eyes narrowing slightly as I stepped in. Nurse Blake, he said, his voice calm but laced with something I couldn't quite place. It seems my keycard has gone missing. You wouldn't happen to know anything about that, would you? I forced myself to meet his gaze, my heart pounding so loudly I was sure he could hear it. No, I haven't seen it, I said, praying my voice sounded steady. Maybe it fell off somewhere. He studied me for a long moment, the silence stretching out until it became unbearable. Finally, he nodded. Perhaps. Let me know if you find it. I nodded quickly, eager to escape his piercing gaze. As I turned to leave, something on his desk caught my eye, a small, black notebook partially hidden beneath a stack of papers. The words Trial 43B were scrawled across the cover in bold black ink. My pulse quickened, but I forced myself to keep walking. I couldn't risk being caught. Not yet. That night, I returned to the East Wing. I knew it was reckless, but I couldn't stop myself. The paper Oliver had given me burned in my pocket, a constant reminder that I was in way over my head. But if I didn't find out the truth, who would? The doors to the abandoned ward creaked open, the sound echoing through the empty hallway. The air was colder than before, and the faint hum I'd heard earlier was louder now, almost deafening. It vibrated in my chest, setting my teeth on edge. I followed the corridor to the room where I'd first seen Oliver, my flashlight casting long, flickering shadows on the walls. The metal table was still there, its surface stained and scratched. But this time, I noticed something I hadn't before, a small, rusted box tucked beneath the table. I crouched down, my fingers trembling as I pried the box open. Inside, I found a stack of photographs, their edges yellowed with age. Each one showed a patient strapped to a gurney, their faces contorted in pain. In the corner of each photo, the same words were stamped. Trial 43B, Syn Pharmaceuticals. Bile rose in my throat as I flipped through the photos. These weren't medical treatments, they were experiments. Torture, disguised as science. And someone at this hospital had been complicit. A noise behind me made me freeze. I turned slowly, my flashlight beam cutting through the darkness. Dr. Cole stood in the doorway, his expression cold and unyielding. You shouldn't be here, Samantha, he said, his voice low and menacing. You've seen too much. Chapter 4, The Forgotten Ward. Dr. Cole's words hung in the air like a threat, their weight sinking into my chest. The flashlight in my hand trembled, its beam flickering across his face. He looked calm, too calm. His hands rested casually in the pockets of his pristine lab coat, but his eyes were sharp, predatory. You shouldn't be here, Samantha, he repeated, his tone almost conversational. This area is off limits for a reason. I could say the same about you, I shot back, my voice shaking despite my best efforts. What are you doing here, Dr. Cole? Cleaning up evidence. His expression didn't change, but the slight tilt of his head betrayed a flicker of annoyance. You're making dangerous accusations, he said. It's not too late to walk away from this. Walk away. I laughed bitterly, though the sound came out more like a gasp. You're experimenting on patients, torturing them. You think I'm just going to ignore that? Dr. Cole sighed, pulling his hands from his pockets. One of them held a syringe filled with a murky, greenish liquid. My stomach turned at the sight. I didn't want it to come to this, he said, almost regretfully. But you've left me no choice. I didn't wait to see what he planned to do. I turned and bolted, the photographs clutched tightly in my free hand. The flashlight's beam bounced wildly as I sprinted down the corridor, the pounding of my footsteps drowned out by the blood rushing in my ears. Behind me, I heard him call out, his voice cold and unyielding. You can't outrun this, Samantha. You're just making it harder on yourself. I didn't stop. I couldn't. The hallway seemed to stretch endlessly, the walls closing in with every step. My lungs burned, my legs ached, but adrenaline pushed me forward. I needed to get out of the ward. I needed to get to the authorities, to someone who could stop this madness. But as I rounded a corner, I skidded to a halt. The exit doors were blocked by two figures in black uniforms, their faces obscured by masks. They stood motionless, their presence as ominous as the dark shadows around them. Panic surged through me as I spun around, only to find Dr. Cole approaching from the other direction. He moved slowly, deliberately, the syringe still in his hand. "There's no way out, Samantha," he said, his voice calm. "You're not the first to dig too deep, and you won't be the last." My mind raced, desperate for a plan. I backed away, my gaze darting between the masked figures and Dr. Cole. There was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. But I still had the photographs, the proof. If I could just get them out of here. "What's in the syringe?" I demanded, stalling for time. "Another one of your experiments?" Dr. Cole smiled faintly. "A sedative," he said. "To make this easier for both of us." I didn't believe him for a second. The liquid in that syringe wasn't a sedative. It was something much worse. I clutched the photographs tighter, my fingers digging into the edges. "What happens when they find out?" I asked, my voice rising. "When the truth comes out, you think Syn Pharmaceuticals will protect you?" His smile faltered, just for a moment. "There won't be anyone left to tell," he said quietly. Before he could move, I acted. With a burst of adrenaline, I threw the flashlight at him, the heavy object striking him in the chest. He stumbled back, startled, and I seized the opportunity to run. I barreled toward the masked figures, my heart pounding. They reacted quickly, their hands reaching out to grab me, but I twisted at the last second, slipping past them and into the next hallway. I could hear their footsteps behind me, fast and relentless, but I didn't dare look back. The hospital was a labyrinth, its twisting corridors and flickering lights disorienting me. I turned corner after corner, my breath coming in ragged gasps, until I found myself back in the main psychiatric ward. The sudden normalcy of the brightly lit space was jarring, like stepping into a different world. The nurse's station was deserted, the chairs pushed neatly under the desk. I darted behind the counter, frantically searching for a place to hide the photographs. My hands shook as I stuffed them into the back of a filing cabinet, shoving random folders over them. The sound of footsteps grew louder, and I knew I couldn't stay there. I slipped out from behind the counter and ducked into an empty patient room, pressing myself against the wall. My heart thundered in my chest as the door creaked open, and I held my breath. A pair of black boots stepped into view, followed by the rest of the masked figure. He scanned the room, his movements slow and deliberate. I bit down on my lip, praying he wouldn't notice me in the shadows. After what felt like an eternity, he turned and left. I waited a few moments, my body trembling, before creeping to the door and peeking out. The hallway was empty. I didn't stop running until I reached the parking lot. The cool night air hit my face, and I sucked in deep breaths, my lungs aching. My car was parked at the far end of the lot, its familiar shape a beacon of safety. I sprinted toward it, fumbling with my keys as I unlocked the door. Once inside, I locked the doors and started the engine, the sound roaring to life in the silence. My hands gripped the steering wheel tightly as I pulled out of the lot, my eyes darting to the rearview mirror. No one followed me, but I knew this wasn't over. Back at my apartment, I sat at the kitchen table, the photographs spread out in front of me. My hands trembled as I stared at them, the faces of the patients haunting me. They weren't just victims, they were evidence. Evidence that could bring down Dr. Cole, Syn Pharmaceuticals, and the entire corrupt system that had allowed this to happen. But I also knew the risks. If they were willing to kill to keep their secrets, what would they do to me if I exposed them? A sudden knock at the door made me jump. My breath caught in my throat as I stared at the door, my mind racing. It was nearly midnight, too late for visitors. Slowly, I stood and approached the door, my heart pounding. "Samantha Blake," a voice called from the other side. "We need to talk." I hesitated, my hand hovering over the doorknob. Something about the voice sent a chill down my spine. It was calm, composed, too composed. "Who is it?" I asked, my voice shaking. There was a pause before the voice replied. "We're with Syn Pharmaceuticals. Open the door." Chapter 5, A Deadly Alliance. The voice on the other side of the door sent a shiver down my spine. My fingers hovered over the lock, every nerve in my body screaming at me to run, to hide, to do anything but open that door. They had found me, and far too quickly. Syn Pharmaceuticals wasn't wasting any time. "Samantha," the voice called again, calm but insistent. "We know you're in there. Let's not make this more complicated than it needs to be." I stepped back from the door, my mind racing. The photographs were still spread out on the table behind me, the damning evidence of everything I'd uncovered. If they got their hands on them, this entire nightmare would vanish into the void of corporate cover-ups. The knock came again, harder this time. Open the door, Samantha. We just want to talk. I had to think fast. My eyes darted around the room, landing on the window above the sink. It was a tight squeeze, but it might be my only way out. Grabbing the photographs, I stuffed them into my backpack and slung it over my shoulder. The pounding on the door grew louder, and the handle rattled as they tried to force it open. Samantha, the voice shouted, the calm facade cracking. Don't make us come in there. I didn't wait to see what would happen next. I climbed onto the counter and pushed the window open, the cool night air rushing in. My heart pounded as I wriggled through the narrow frame, the edges scraping against my sides. I landed awkwardly on the ground outside, my knees buckling beneath me. A crash came from inside as the front door burst open. I didn't look back. I ran. The alley behind my apartment was dark and quiet, the only sounds my ragged breathing and the distant hum of traffic. I stuck to the shadows, my ears straining for any sign of pursuit. The photographs weighed heavily in my bag, a constant reminder of the danger I was in. I made it to the end of the alley and ducked into a convenience store, the harsh fluorescent lights making me squint. The cashier glanced at me briefly before returning to his phone, uninterested in the disheveled woman who had just stumbled in. I pretended to browse the shelves, my mind racing. I needed a plan. The authorities were out of the question. Sin Pharmaceuticals had too much power, too many connections. If I went to the police, I'd disappear just like Oliver. Or worse. As I weighed my options, I caught sight of a small payphone near the door. It was ancient, a relic from another era, but it might be just what I needed. I fished a few coins from my pocket and dialed the only person I could think of, my brother Tom. Tom answered on the third ring, his voice groggy with sleep. Hello. It's me, I said, my voice barely above a whisper. I need your help. Samantha. His tone shifted instantly, concern replacing the grogginess. What's going on? Are you okay? No, I said, glancing nervously at the door. I'm in trouble. Big trouble. I can't explain over the phone, but I need a place to hide. Just for a little while. There was a pause, and I could hear him shifting in bed. Okay, he said finally. Come to my place. I'll leave the door unlocked. Thank you, I said, relief flooding through me. I'll be there soon. Tom lived on the outskirts of town, in a small house surrounded by dense woods. The drive there was nerve-wracking, every set of headlights in my rearview mirror a potential threat. By the time I pulled into his driveway, my hands were shaking so badly I could barely shut off the engine. He met me at the door, his brow furrowed with worry. What the hell is going on, Sam? I hesitated, the weight of everything I'd seen threatening to crush me. It's complicated, I said finally. But people are after me. Dangerous people. And I don't know who I can trust. Tom stared at me for a moment before nodding. Come inside. You look like you're about to collapse. Once inside, I spread the photographs out on his coffee table, my hands trembling as I explained everything. The experiments, the missing patients, Dr. Cole's threats, it all came pouring out in a rush of words. Tom listened in silence, his expression growing darker with every detail. When I finished, he leaned back in his chair, running a hand through his hair. Jesus, Sam. I don't even know what to say. I need to expose them, I said, my voice shaking. But I don't know how. If I go to the police, they'll cover it up. If I go public, they'll kill me. Tom was silent for a moment, his eyes fixed on the photographs. Finally, he said, there's someone I know. A journalist. She's been digging into corporate corruption for years. If anyone can help you, it's her. My heart leapt at the possibility. Can you get me in touch with her? He nodded. I'll call her in the morning. But for now, you need to rest. You look like you're about to drop. That night, I slept fitfully, the images of the photographs haunting my dreams. I woke up several times, drenched in sweat, convinced I'd heard footsteps outside the house. But each time, the woods were silent, their shadows unmoving. When morning came, Tom made the call. The journalist, a woman named Rachel Pierce, agreed to meet us at a diner on the edge of town. She sounded cautious but intrigued, her curiosity piqued by the promise of evidence. We arrived at the diner a few hours later, the smell of coffee and bacon doing little to calm my nerves. Rachel was already there, a sharp-looking woman in her late 30s with a laptop open in front of her. She greeted us with a firm handshake, her eyes keen and searching. Let's see what you've got, she said, getting straight to the point. I handed her the photographs, my hands trembling. She examined them carefully, her expression unreadable. When she looked up, Her eyes were blazing with determination. "This is big," she said. "Bigger than anything I've ever worked on. But you need to understand something, Samantha. If we go forward with this, they'll come after you. Hard. They're already after me," I said quietly. "I just want the truth to come out." Rachel nodded, a small smile tugging at the corner of her mouth. "Then let's make it happen." But as we left the diner, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being watched. The sense of unease that had followed me since that night in the ward was stronger than ever. And I knew this wasn't over. Not by a long shot. Chapter 6, The Reckoning. The drive back from the diner was tense. Every pair of headlights in the rearview mirror felt like a threat, every turn in the road a potential ambush. Rachel sat in the back seat, flipping through the photographs again, her brow furrowed in concentration. Tom, in the passenger seat, kept glancing at me, his worry etched deeply into his face. "This is going to get messy," Rachel said, breaking the silence. "Syn Pharmaceuticals has deep pockets and deeper connections. They've silenced bigger scandals than this." "They won't silence me," I said, gripping the wheel tightly. My voice trembled, but I meant every word. "Not this time." Rachel glanced up, her sharp gaze meeting mine in the rearview mirror. "You're brave, Samantha. But bravery alone won't keep you alive." Her words hung in the air like a warning, and I couldn't argue. I wasn't brave, I was terrified. But the fear only fueled my determination. I had to see this through, no matter the cost. When we reached Tom's house, Rachel wasted no time. She set up her laptop on the kitchen table, plugging in a portable scanner to digitize the photographs. The whirring sound of the machine filled the room as she worked, her fingers flying across the keyboard. I watched her, a knot of anxiety tightening in my chest. "What's the plan?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. "We leak it," Rachel said without looking up. "Not just to one outlet, but to as many as we can. News networks, social media, independent journalists. If we flood the system with this, they can't cover it up." Tom nodded, his jaw tight. "And then what?" "They come after us." "They'll try," Rachel admitted. "But if we move fast, they won't have time to contain the fallout. The key is to stay ahead of them." I wanted to believe her, but a sinking feeling told me it wouldn't be that simple. We worked through the night, scanning the photographs, drafting statements, and compiling the evidence into a comprehensive exposé. Rachel's experience as a journalist was evident in the way she pieced everything together, weaving a narrative that was impossible to ignore. By the time the first rays of sunlight crept through the windows, we had a plan. But as we prepared to send the files out, the lights flickered. Tom frowned, glancing up from his coffee. "What was that?" Before anyone could answer, the house was plunged into darkness. The hum of electronics died, leaving an eerie silence in its wake. My stomach dropped. "They're here." Rachel stood, her movements deliberate. "Do you have a gun?" Tom nodded, already moving to retrieve it from his bedroom. I grabbed a flashlight, my hands shaking as I clicked it on. The beam of light cut through the darkness, illuminating the worried faces of my companions. The sound of footsteps outside made my blood run cold. They came in waves, masked figures dressed in black, their movements precise and coordinated. The first window shattered with a deafening crash, and I barely had time to duck before a flashbang exploded in the living room. The blinding light and piercing sound sent me reeling, my ears ringing as I scrambled for cover. Tom emerged from his bedroom, a shotgun in his hands. He fired a warning shot through the broken window, the blast echoing through the house. "Stay down," he shouted, his voice barely audible over the chaos. Rachel pulled me behind the kitchen counter, her expression grim. "They're not here to scare us," she said. "They're here to kill us." The weight of her words hit me like a punch to the gut. This wasn't just intimidation. They intended to silence us permanently. The next hour was a blur of noise and fear. Tom held them off as best he could, his shotgun thundering in the confined space. Rachel and I worked frantically to upload the files, her laptop glowing faintly in the darkness. My hands shook as I typed, my vision swimming with tears. "We're running out of time," Rachel said, her voice urgent. "I need another minute." A loud crash came from the hallway, and Tom shouted in pain. My heart lurched as I peeked around the corner, seeing him crumpled on the floor, blood pooling beneath him. One of the masked intruders stood over him, raising a pistol. Without thinking, I grabbed a kitchen knife from the counter and charged. The intruder turned just as I reached him, but I was faster. The knife plunged into his side, and he let out a choked gasp before collapsing. I fell to my knees beside Tom, my hands trembling as I pressed against his wound. "Stay with me," I begged, tears streaming down my face. "Please stay with me." His eyes fluttered open, and he managed a weak smile. "Finish it, Sam," he whispered. "Don't let them win." Rachel's voice cut through the haze. "It's done," she shouted. "The files are out." Relief flooded through me, but it was short-lived. More footsteps echoed down the hallway, and I knew we couldn't hold them off any longer. "We have to go," Rachel said, grabbing my arm. "Now." I hesitated, glancing down at Tom. His breathing was shallow, his face pale. "I can't leave him," I said, my voice breaking. Rachel's grip tightened. "If we stay, we're dead. Do you understand me? We have to go." I didn't remember much of the escape. The world blurred around me as Rachel and I fled into the woods, the sounds of gunfire and shouting fading into the distance. My legs burned, my lungs screamed, but I didn't stop until the house was far behind us. When we finally collapsed beneath the cover of the trees, I broke down. Sobs racked my body as I thought of Tom, his smile, his sacrifice. He had given everything to protect me, and I couldn't even save him. Rachel placed a hand on my shoulder, her expression solemn. "He gave you a chance," she said softly. "Don't waste it." The story broke the next day. News outlets picked it up in droves, the photographs and files spreading like wildfire across the internet. Sin Pharmaceuticals tried to deny it, but the evidence was overwhelming. Protests erupted, lawsuits were filed, and the company's stock plummeted. But the victory felt hollow. I couldn't stop thinking about Tom, about the lives lost in that ward, about the faces in those photographs. Justice had been served, but at a cost I wasn't sure I could bear. Rachel and I parted ways soon after, each of us going into hiding. The danger hadn't passed, not completely, but I knew one thing for sure. They had tried to silence me, and they had failed. The knock on the door the night before had been a warning, but I hadn't understood the depth of it. Now, as we sat huddled in Tom's kitchen with Rachel's laptop open on the table, the weight of what we were about to unleash hung heavy in the air. Every step we took, every word we typed, felt like a move in a dangerous game we were losing control of. "We need to think this through," Tom said, pacing the small kitchen. His shotgun leaned against the wall, a grim reminder of how close danger was. "Once this goes out, there's no coming back." "There's no coming back anyway," I said, my voice steady despite the fear clawing at my chest. "They've already made that clear. The only way we survive this is by making sure the truth gets out, fast." Rachel didn't look up from her laptop. "The files are almost ready. I'm packaging them into a secure archive and setting up timed releases. If something happens to us, the rest will automatically go live. How long until it's done?" Tom asked, his voice tight. Rachel glanced at the progress bar on the screen. "An hour, maybe less. An hour. 60 minutes between us and the truth. 60 minutes to stay alive." As Rachel worked, the rest of us prepared for the worst. Tom barricaded the doors and windows, dragging furniture into place with a grim determination. I kept my hands busy checking supplies, flashlights, batteries, a first aid kit, anything that might give us an edge. The weight of the photographs in my bag was a constant reminder of what we were fighting for. The air in the house was thick with tension, every creak of the floorboards or gust of wind outside making us jump. Rachel's fingers flew over the keyboard, her face illuminated by the pale glow of the screen. The only sound was the soft whirring of her laptop fan, a fragile thread of normalcy in the chaos. But then, the lights flickered. Tom froze mid-step, his eyes darting to the windows. The darkness outside seemed to press against the glass, alive with unseen threats. Rachel cursed under her breath, her fingers pausing on the keys. "This isn't a power outage," she said. "They're here." The first attack came quickly, brutal in its precision. A loud crash shattered the tense silence as the living room window exploded inward, sending shards of glass spraying across the floor. I grabbed the flashlight and spun toward the sound, the beam catching the glint of a black-clad figure climbing through the broken frame. "Tom!" I screamed, but he was already moving. The shotgun roared, the deafening blast shaking the walls. The intruder fell back, his body crumpling against the frame, but more figures were already closing in. "Stay down!" Tom shouted, pumping the shotgun with practiced ease. He fired again, the flash illuminating the determined set of his jaw. Rachel grabbed my arm, dragging me toward the kitchen. "We can't hold them off forever," she said, her voice urgent. "We need to finish the upload." I nodded, my heart pounding as we ducked behind the counter. The laptop sat on the table, its screen still glowing. The progress bar was agonizingly slow, crawling toward completion. The fight escalated quickly. More windows shattered, the masked figures pouring in like a tide. Tom held his ground, but the odds were overwhelming. I could hear the thud of bodies hitting the floor, the sharp bark of gunfire, and the shouts of our attackers. The air was thick with the acrid smell of gunpowder and fear. I peeked over the counter just in time to see one of the intruders grab Tom, slamming him into the wall. The shotgun fell from his hands, clattering to the floor. I didn't think, I just acted. Grabbing a heavy frying pan from the stove, I ran at the attacker, swinging with all my strength. The pan connected with a sickening crack, and the man dropped unconscious. "Sam, get back!" Tom shouted, but it was too late. Another figure lunged at me, knocking me to the ground. Pain shot through my ribs as I struggled against him, his hands closing around my throat. Stars danced in my vision, and for a terrifying moment, I thought it was over. But then Rachel was there, slamming a chair into the attacker's back. He fell off me with a grunt, and I gasped for air, my chest heaving. "Upload's almost done," Rachel shouted. "Just hold on a little longer." The next few minutes were a blur of chaos and desperation. I fought with everything I had, my fear giving way to raw survival instinct. Rachel and Tom were relentless, their determination matching mine. But it wasn't enough. Tom fell first. I saw him go down out of the corner of my eye, his body crumpling to the floor as a bullet tore through his side. Blood pooled beneath him, dark and terrible, and my scream was lost in the noise. I wanted to go to him, to help him, but Rachel grabbed me, pulling me back. "We can't stop now," she shouted, her voice breaking. "He wouldn't want us to." Tears blurred my vision, but I forced myself to keep moving. The progress bar on the laptop was nearly full, just a few more seconds. The moment the upload completed, Rachel hit the final key with a triumphant shout. "It's done," she said. "The files are out, they can't stop it now." But the victory was short-lived. The remaining attackers turned their attention to us, their movements deliberate and unhurried. They didn't care about the files anymore. They cared about revenge. "Run," Rachel screamed, shoving me toward the back door. "Go, Sam. I'll hold them off." "No," I shouted, grabbing her arm. "I'm not leaving you." "You have to," she said, her eyes fierce. "You're the one who started this. You have to finish it." Before I could argue, she pushed me out the door, slamming it shut behind me. The last thing I saw was her standing in the doorway, a fire extinguisher in her hands, ready to fight. I ran into the woods, the sounds of the battle fading behind me. My legs burned, my lungs screamed, but I didn't stop until I was deep in the trees, surrounded by darkness and silence. I collapsed against a tree, my body shaking with sobs. Rachel's sacrifice, Tom's death, it wasn't supposed to end like this. But the files were out. The truth was out. And that had to mean something. The fallout was immediate and brutal. Within hours, the files had gone viral, sparking outrage across the country. Protests erupted outside Syn Pharmaceuticals' headquarters, and government officials were forced to respond. Investigations were launched, arrests were made, and the company's secrets were dragged into the light. But the victory felt hollow. Tom was gone, Rachel was gone, and I was left to pick up the pieces. Months later, I sat in a small cabin in the mountains, far from the chaos of the city. The world had moved on, but I hadn't. The nightmares still came, and the scars, both physical and emotional, were a constant reminder of what I'd lost. But I didn't regret it. The lives we'd saved, the justice we'd brought, it was worth the pain. As I stared out at the snowy landscape, I thought of Tom's last words, "Don't let them win." I hadn't, and I never would.